Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Steady Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Faster Than a Bullet But Not a Train Williams.
Okay, I'll take that one.
We got a great show, as we also have with us Miss Part-timer slash intern slash stenographer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I have to be a little nicer to slash she's not really nice to us, Amy.
I am nice. I mean, just because Amy there was the faux pas, like with me and audio stuff, it happens, okay?
It obviously happens quite a bit. We were actually recording a little bit ago and you decided to talk during the intro when we were
because
recording.
I was told that we could.
I never said that.
Yes, you have. It has been consistent. Anyway, keep
I've
going.
Never stated it.
Keep going.
Either way, we have a great show for you in store as we're going to be talking about the recently released film in theaters, Bullet Train, starring Brad Pitt and so many other folks. We're excited to talk about that and get into the details. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 300 episodes allegedly on our website. Check them out at the website, filmlosophers.com. We got everything from romance to action to comedy to anime to conversations about the industry. Anything you're looking for, we've probably talked about it. So head on over, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on any platform that streams podcasts, such as iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. Anywhere where you're looking for podcasts, we are there. Just look up The Filmlosophers, and you'll find us there with the big old top hat and monocle. If you're interested, give us a follow, listen in, give us a 5-star review. I think we've earned it. So head on over to wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, we are on the socials over at Facebook, Instagram, at Twitter. We will give you the handles at the end. Also, we will be doing an announcement this Friday on our Instagram page for a giveaway. Stick around for more details later. We're going to be talking about the movie Bullet Train, but I think one of the biggest things that's always interesting before you go and see a movie is the 30 minutes of trailers that we get.
This needs to stop.
Yep.
I feel like you can now start planning your, like, I feel like a good movie theater will actually give you the time the movie's actually going to start versus the time the trailers are going.
Yes. No, they will not do
I would
that.
Like them to.
I mean, I would like them to too, but they will not.
I'm pretty sure some obscure theater, I'm pretty sure one of our listeners
Does
is like,
Alamo
oh.
Do it?
Huh?
Does the Alamo Drafthouse do it?
I don't know.
Well, they're different. They're special.
I know, they but maybe they can come our way.
I know, come they out can, they to can, California.
Yeah, they're going to do a mobile theater and just bring out their whole stuff and just,
bring
you know.
Bring them out, bring them out. Yeah. I want it. I would like that.
You remember Olaf's Magic Christmas?
Oh my God.
That was in front of a movie, which also still had the same amount of trailers. It was an hour before the movie started.
It was, just about.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, like you said, you had the trailer still, mm-hmm. which was about 25 to 30 minutes, and then that ridiculous, I don't even want to call it a short, because it wasn't a short.
No, it cannot be a short at 20 minutes.
Not even a special. It wasn't that special. Like
it was
I
a TV special. Like that would have fit essentially like if we were doing your Christmas special.
It was essentially just a show. It was like essentially a mini movie
like,
practically.
That has to come with a warning. You cannot do that.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
Because then you going in expecting, okay, this movie's maybe about an hour and a half to 2 hours long. I'm going to have a 30-minute stint of trailer. So I got to kind of plan for, okay, I'm going to be in this movie theater for about 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Or more.
Tack on that the 30-minute short mini movie of Olaf's whatever Christmas, Gaga Christmas.
You hate it a lot.
It was
so annoying.
Honestly, I think that's what added to my dislike for Olaf as a character because of the fact of that ridiculous short.
Sorry, Josh Gad, we like you as a human.
I was okay with the first movie. I'm like, okay, you know, Olaf's fun. Yeah, whatever. And then I go and see Coco, and this is, you know, plaqued right there in the beginning. But trailers are getting really interesting nowadays because, like, we get a lot of different things from more specific to the actual film. Then you'll get some that are like, okay, why the heck are we watching this? But there was a specific trailer that was really, really like, I did not expect it at all because I wasn't aware that they were making a movie. And it was a trailer for that movie, Till, which is the story about that young African-American kid back in the 50s or 60s, I believe.
1955, so yes.
50s. In the 50s, who had, you know, who was essentially lynched and beaten. And the mom, instead of going the route of having a closed casket, left it open so that the world could see what had happened to her son. It's a very moving trailer, and it's very, like, it's got a lot of heavy material. And I don't at all mean to jest about it at all. There's no joke about this. Mm-hmm. I'm just stating it was a very moving trailer. However, Spencer did some deep diving on this particular story, and
okay, so here's what happened. I was, like, just watching the movie, I was, like, the trailer, I was like, I do not want to watch this movie. This is like a level of heaviness I'm not okay with. And also, I've had a lot of feelings about this trailer, guys. I was trying to figure out why I am so anti this one. Like, I'm normally against, like, me personally seeing some of these movies, and because they deal with really heavy subject matter.
I mean, it's not a matter of you just saying, like, you don't like it. It's just a matter of, like you said, it's just heavy.
Yeah, and I guess maybe because this one is about a child, and, like, he didn't go there to, like, be part of the civil rights movement. He just was there to see his family and then died, and then a whole thing happened after it. And, like, I feel all sorts of ways about it. And so I was just, like, looking around, seeing what people were saying. And
I mean, as a good filmmaster, I mean, you do your research. Yeah. And I mean, it's all in the effort of adding more to the conversation when we have that conversation about it, you know. So it's not like you were just like, I don't know anything about this, let me look at it. It's you had a precursory knowledge of it.
Oh yeah, I learned about that like very long time ago. So just seeing what people saying on the interwebs and stuff, and then someone made the interesting fact of like, well, at least, like, you know, this movie has, like, you know, black cast, has, like, black directors who are, like, really trying to be sensitive and stuff, and this is not also the worst version that's been out to date. And I was like, oh, I was very unaware of, like, some of the other versions. And so then they mentioned a version of this movie that was an opera.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, an opera?
Yeah, an opera.
Like when MTV did, like, Carmen as an opera with Beyonce?
So here's what I say. I have not seen this. I have not seen anything from it. But the word opera was there.
Okay.
So if it's, like, actually a musical, like, that could be the thing, but, like, it said opera.
Uh-oh.
So in this opera, it is centered around a fictional white woman who is experiencing the events of what is happening to Emmett Till. I believe she's a high school teacher who is very against racism, but isn't saying anything. And so...
I'm sorry. What?
So, yeah. So, like, all of that is just a lot to deal with. Like, and so that kind of, like, the knowledge of that existing kind of changed my feelings on the trailer itself. Because then I kind of turned and I was like, well, maybe this isn't as, like, this is actually, you know, heavily needed if people are creating. Oh, guess what year this opera came out?
Please don't tell me it was in the last 10 years.
This year.
Wait, it's a 2022 opera.
It's a 2022. It came out. Hold
me
back.
Spencer, I don't have earrings on, but take my earrings and hold me back. Like, what?
That was a shock.
What?
So, that's. So, because while you were saying that, I was looking it up.
You looked it up.
This. There's already 12,000 signatures and counting calling for the opera to never see the light of day.
Mm-hmm. It should have never even. Who backed this? I want to know who we need to go deal with that was like, do you know what's a great idea? Having a white woman talk about an issue that she's fictitious and has nothing to do with because we need to be connected to the story. No.
That's,
no.
That's...
No. It's like, a lot of no.
I'm pretty sure there was probably well-intentioned behind it.
Oh. I feel like there is.
But, I mean, the woman is also 82 years old. So
the person that wrote it?
Yeah.
She's a white 82-year-old woman that decided that she needed to create a fictitious person to express.
She was. It says she was born just 2 years before Till was, and can remember the day she learned the 14-year-old boy from Chicago was beaten beyond recognition, and so forth and so forth.
Would she live in the town?
Probably not.
Okay, so then
I don't understand. Like, it's one thing to speak out on behalf of the educational aspect to make people aware and talk about it. Mm-hmm. This woman is getting money from this.
Yes.
From a story that's not even hers to tell.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
And it's like, that's just a whole nother level of, you know, banking off of someone else's experiences, almost cultural appropriation to this point.
Yes.
Because that story does not need to be in this is not well, this is a racial comment. It doesn't belong in anyone else's hands except for a well-meaning, culturally sensitive black person. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a white person's story to tell.
Nope.
You know, unless it was from the perspective of one of the shooters or maybe one of the bad people. Like, if that's what you're going for, because we obviously, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind the people who did this were white. Like, oh, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. I'm 99.999% sure. So if you were doing a story based on the revelation that your great grandfather or your whatever, however old she is, you know, somebody that she knew was a part of the mob that changed his mentality over the course of time because of the situation or something else. Number one, you can't turn this into a fictitious tale. Nope. This is not your story to tell. This is not even your culture. And number two, you're making money off of it. You're going to be bringing in all these people who are going to pay well to do for each of those seats, and it's going in your pocket. I don't really see anything in here about her, you know, oh, I'm going to take all this money and I'm going to give it to, you know,
she's not. This she's organization. 82. What are you going to do? She's going to be like, do you know what? Do you know what would really help is if I hung on to this and made sure that I didn't have to go into, what is it, the old folks home? I want a private nurse to come visit me at my house while I'm dying. You're 82. I understand you have a passion for opera. Pick a different subject.
Oh my God.
Don't keep reading. Don't keep reading.
This you woman like seems the most like obtuse. She says, so this is what she says. It says, when mentioned about the criticism and about the character, she says the opera is intended for everyone. She feels the inclusion of that sort of character is important for predominantly white opera-going audiences to see. Quote, a character for the white audience to emulate, admire, follow, cheer on, Koss, the woman's name is Koss. Koss says, I like something somebody said. Black people don't like other people writing their stories. Black people walk a different road. You'll never understand it.
Okay. Close. Whatever. Close it. I don't want to hear. This is going to make me mad. And I need to talk about Brad Pitt. And I have problems already because I've had mixed feelings on Brad Pitt. Looks like
this point is loud.
Here's the thing. There was an opera that was created by a black opera composer and librettist. I'm not sure I'm saying that word right. The late Michael Raphael back in 2013. But you don't really hear a lot about that. Unfortunately, you know, gets lost in history, you know, more than likely because it's a story not everybody wants to hear. Yeah. Shining a light on America's, you know, skeletons in their closet. The actual opera was performed during November of 2020 via Zoom. And that was because of the fact that it obviously highlighted a lot of the situations that happened during that time. But for some reason, this woman is taken aback by the scrutiny about her opera. She said, in all these years from when I started the play from the early 90s to last week, nobody ever said a word to me or nobody questioned me.
Because you were held up inside your house and nobody knew what the heck you were doing from the 90s. This woman must have retired and go, do you know what I'm going to write? I'm going to write the next great white opera.
It's about
she
a says,
black boy.
When she was
like,
asked,
what the heck?
When she was asked about the conversation about race and how it evolved in that span of time, she acknowledges that it has, citing the Black Lives Matter movement. She says, it's a moment where I really understand the anger, you know, accumulation over hundreds of years. She said, it's certainly understandable. No, it's not.
I really understand. How is she going
to understand that?
I want to swear. Can I swear at things? Do we have enough sheep for my swearing?
No.
Not today. But
I just...
Please, please. No, this woman is making me so infuriated. And I do not have enough expressions on my face or verbally to accumulate that besides Spencer laughing because I
there are no real words for this except, you know, don't. Try not.
Just no.
Yeah,
no.
So that's what I learned today. And now I'm very much in favor of this Emmett Till movie, even though I still have concerns about where the money is going from that. But
yeah. So there's an individual. His name is Garrett McQueen. He's an advocate for Black people in music. He belongs to an organization called Black Opera Alliance. He essentially stated the solution would be if each of those people who took the time to pay their money and go see that opera went to their racist uncle or children or neighbor and pushed them to do something, went into their workplace and said, quote, "You need to be donating to anti-racist causes and organizations," McQueen said. "And this opera at the end of the day isn't in itself a solution or progress." So... I'm going to leave it at that because that's infuriating. Why would you think that that's okay? Like, where in your mind do you think...
Your senile mind, let's be honest.
That's like saying a white woman or a white person is going to go and talk about a specific slave's, you know, experience and how it affected them and how he was going to give this massive, like, revelation to people like Harriet Tubman or individuals like that. It just doesn't make any sense because that's not your culture. Stick to Davy Crockett. Like, really, stick to things that you would know.
You don't even get Davy Crockett. Let's be honest. This, I can't even call her a young lady. This woman. Idiot. She's an idiot at this junction. She, for the last 30 plus years, she's decided, she's 80 something, which means she was 50 something. She decided in the 90s that this was going to be a great idea. Like, oh, I want to create an opera. Do you know what's really important for me to create a fictitious character that is in the midst of a story that is not her own? And do you know what she's going to do? Nothing.
Oh, I'm pretty sure she's still going to put it on. She's going to try to put it on. I think the biggest bigger question is the people who are in this opera, because obviously they have to have a Black person play some.
Wouldn't even surprise me.
This is going to go into like the bamboozled arena of like blackface and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
The bamboozled movie by Spike Lee. Like, I feel like this is going in that direction. Maybe somebody put her up to it. Maybe it's like this 20-year-long prank that we're on.
30. Almost 30. Like,
no, she's not almost 30. The story.
No, though. She's been working on it for 30. Somebody said something and she just ignored them. That is.
Probably. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you don't get it.
Like, bold face lied. She was like, "Guys, you want to see my opera?" And someone's like, "No." No. And she's like, "I think it's going to be great success."
To be fair, if someone had done this to me, I'd have been like, and walked away. Because like, I would not
I
have
was just
had
gonna
the
say.
Emotional energy to explain why this is a dumb idea. So like, if she says, "No one told me," I kind of could buy it.
Does she have children?
I would actually have to agree with Spence. I feel like this is one of those situations where maybe people were like, "You can't be serious." She hands the script or she hands a treatment over and they're like, "Okay," and then just handed it back.
But like, some
actually, now that we're on this train, this is exactly how this happens. Because like, I would have been like, "Oh, I need help with this opera." You would have looked over. I'd be like, "Oh, I want to watch this crash and burn." Like, free front row seats to this nonsense.
Maybe back then I wouldn't have mind watching a crash and burn, but like nowadays, in the midst of everything going on, and like, this woman's going to get railroaded if she doesn't do something to stop it quick, and it's going to get bad.
She's not going to stop it because let's remember, what's the old adage? Any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, that's really not
true. No, that's actually not the truth anymore. Because
anymore.
Well,
but she don't know because apparently she's got to be, you know, a white audience needs a white character to empathize with.
Yeah.
Because that's what this story needs.
Because that's exactly what this story needs.
People need some element of this story to make them feel like, okay, I don't have to carry that guilt anymore. It's like, I get it. You don't want to have the white guilt for this situation. But the truth of the matter is, it's there. And it is part of your heritage. It's like, I mean, no offense to anybody who's German who listens, but part of the people who are, you know, of German heritage, they have to hold on to the fact that part of their history is the whole Third Reich movement and everything like that. That's all part of their heritage. Now, a lot of them push really hard to move away from that and not, you know, kind of move, not have any relation to that at all, but it's still there.
Well, and the country also has taken the steps to make sure that they understand what happened in the past cannot and will not be repeated in the country that they have continued to build since.
I have yet to see anybody in Germany do, and I'm not talking about the producers, but like a you know, Third Reich the musical, you know, and talk about like, oh, we were observers of the situation. We weren't actually a part of it, but we were watching, and we just felt so bad for those Jewish people. Like, can you imagine something like that? That's so insensitive on a worldwide scale.
Oh my God.
So either way, let's hope that never sees the light of day, and that script,
get a chance at it,
you know, burns to the ground. But speaking of burn to the ground, this transitions to our review for tonight of Bullet Train. This is a movie that honestly took us by surprise because of the fact that this is a movie, and much like the music you're listening to, it is very moving. It's very, like, it's kinetic. It's constantly... This was a movie that, honestly, I went in thinking I had already seen all the trailers. The trailers gave everything away. There's not much else for me to see. And then you go and see the movie, and you're like, the trailers were like a blip, like a second of everything going on. So before we dive into this any further, Spencer, why don't you give us the official synopsis goodness?
Ladybug is an unlucky assassin, determined to do his job peacefully after one too many gigs gone off the rails. Fate, however, may have other plans, as Ladybug's latest mission puts him on a collision course with lethal adversaries from around the globe, all with connected yet conflicting objectives on the world's fastest train.
Directed by David Leitch, the film stars Brad Pitt, Joey King, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry, Andrew Koji, Hiroyuki Sanada, Michael Shannon, Benito A. Martinez Ocasio, a.k.a. Bad Bunny, and Sandra Bullock. A couple pieces of information about the movie. Bullet Train is actually based on the Japanese novel Maria Beetle by Kotaro Isaka, which was first published in 2010. The visibility from the film's production led to Harville Saker's acquisition of the novel's English publishing rights, bring Isaka's work to English for the first time. Another piece of information, David Leitch and Brad Pitt had a long working relationship before Bullet Train. Leitch has worked as Brad Pitt's stunt double in multiple films, including Fight Club, Ocean's 11, 2001 Ocean's 11, Troy, and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Pitt also made a cameo in Leitch's second directorial effort in Deadpool 2. So that's actually pretty cool. Brad Pitt actually did 95% of his own stunts in the film, according to stunt coordinator Greg Remnitzer, which is actually pretty cool, seeing as Brad Pitt is up there in those years. I mean, he's not old, but, I mean, he's getting older, and a lot of other actors his age are kind of taking the back step of, like, letting their stunt doubles do a lot of the work.
Dude is 58, man.
He's 58 and he did 95% of those.
There you go.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually really good. And speaking of performances, Sandra Bullock actually replaced Lady Gaga in the movie. Yeah. So apparently Lady Gaga was first initially put up there to play the role for the handler. But for whatever reasons, maybe it was for Joker 2. Sandra Bullock came in and did it. Another cool thing that I didn't actually get a chance to put in here, the Sony executives reportedly reached out to Aaron Taylor-Johnson after being pressed by his scenes in Bullet Train to star as the title character in the upcoming 2013 Marvel film Kraven the Hunter.
2023,
sorry.
Sorry, I had to check that. Did I miss a Kraven the Hunter because of this?
There's a lot of years being thrown out here, but I mean, because of his role in this one, he got picked to play Kraven the Hunter, which is actually cool. Interesting. Talking about this movie is definitely one of those ones that you don't expect to be, you know, good. And then you see it and you're like, I was wrong. I was dead wrong. Because this movie has a lot of movement. Like, from the beginning all the way through to the end, it is fluid. There is action nonstop. There are things that are going on. And it really does... keep you on the edge of your seat throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. There will be spoilers in this conversation. Not a lot of heavy spoilers. I don't want to give away everything, but there are going to be some spoilers that we'll talk about. And so this is your warning, spoiler alert. Before we begin, I do want to talk about expectations, because this is the third film for the director. Yeah, it's the third film. We just said, third. Yeah, this is the third film for the director. And honestly, I'm not. I remember Deadpool 2, but I don't know what his first one was.
That's a great question. That's a really great question. I remember that Brad Pitt, his cameo in Deadpool 2,
was great.
It was so unexpected.
Oh, Spencer,
it's so good.
His directorial debut, Fast and the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw.
The only
Fast and the Furious movie he's seen, but truly the only Fast and the Furious movie I will be willing to watch again.
That movie was fantastic.
Guess what I haven't seen?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Have you seen actually most of them?
No.
I'm just asking.
I've seen Tokyo Drift, and I've seen the one with the submarine, which I think was 8.
There's so many of them.
I know, but there's somewhere on the record where you looked at me and, Amy, you need to see Hobbs and Shaw. And I was like, okay. I'll put it on the list.
Hold on.
Wait a minute.
I take that back. He directed Atomic Blonde.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
But for some reason, I don't know why.
I read the comic book.
So he did Atomic Blonde. That was one on Netflix. Deadpool 2. And then Fast and the Furious.
So this is his fourth.
Okay. Probably his third with Brad Pitt, though.
Mm. Okay.
Which makes sense. Maybe. I don't know. Is he in Deadpool?
Brad Pitt, yeah.
I mean, not Deadpool. Is he in Atomic Blonde? Mm.
I don't know. I didn't see the movie. I just read the comic book.
Either way, problematic.
So let's talk expectations, because like I said, I was kind of going on a little bit of mine, but like expectations for this movie, I honestly thought I wasn't going to get a lot out of it. I remember seeing all the trailers, and they kept pushing more and more trailers. And I would tell you guys, like every time we would watch YouTube or anytime we were in the theaters and they were going to show another trailer, another cut, I'm like, oh my God, I already know how this movie's going to end. I get it. They're giving it away. So honestly, I came into this movie with slightly low expectations because I felt like I knew all the main beats, but I was still excited to see the candidness, if you will, of Brad Pitt's character. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed like he was almost like a realistic type of assassin who's kind of unsure of his own, you know, confidence. And I thought that looked like it was going to be fun. I wasn't too sure about everybody else. I definitely wasn't sure about Michael Shannon. I definitely wasn't sure about the dynamic with Aaron Taylor-Joy and what's his name? Brian Tyree Henry.
It's Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
What did I say?
Aaron Taylor-Joy, because you're thinking about
Anya, I
did the same thing.
Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Sorry. The dynamic between Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry. And then I don't know. There was a lot of the film that you were like, okay, in the trailers, it looks like it'll be fun, but I'm watching the action already. So, you know, I don't know how this is going to play out, and I don't know the importance of everybody that we're going to see, or if it's going to be one of those movies where they're just going to pile in cameos and individual people, and it's going to be like, oh, hodgepodge of mess, and you have to sort them out as you watch it. So I honestly wasn't too sure about the movie. I wasn't sure about the richness of the story, I guess is probably the best way to put it, mm-hmm. because of the trailers. And that's the problem with trailers. They got to stop cutting trailers after like 10, because like after 10, then they start doing like...
Why so many?
Seriously.
Like that dilutes your own product.
Absolutely. 100%. And the fact remains is that, yes, we know there's a separate production company who creates these trailers. We get it.
Yeah, but be like, okay, we don't need 78.
Guys. Yeah, exactly. We don't need you to cut every single part of the movie except for like 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there and put them in trailers.
If you cut so many trailers that it equals the runtime of the film, yes. That's a problem.
Exactly. What about you, Ames? What were some of your expectations going into this movie?
So after I think the third trailer came out, I kind of ignored any time it was on. I was like, okay. And I was still excited, to be very honest, because... I have a love-hate relationship with Brad Pitt, as in the fact of the matter, I have not seen a lot of more of his older Brad Pitt stuff.
Really?
Like older Brad Pitt stuff.
Like what?
I haven't seen Meet Joe Black, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
That was a good one.
There was one where he was, I think he was in Australia.
No, I think
all I can see is the one of him in.
Might be thinking of Australia, the one with Hugh Jackman.
No. He had on like a hat and it was older.
Oh, you're thinking of.
Was it the one about Manifest Destiny?
I'm looking.
But so like the funny thing is everything that you actually listed at the towards the top, Troy.
A River Runs Through It.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. But like Mr. and Mrs. Smith
or Legends Troy, of the Fall.
Haven't seen that. Mr. and Mrs. Sorry, I'm gonna, one more time. I'm gonna try for that. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Troy, Fight Club, Ocean's 11. Well, I've seen the Ocean's franchise, and then. I've seen him. Oh, Men Who Stare at Goats. I saw that one too. Oh. I think it was in that. Mm-hmm. But so I've seen him more later on in life, and everybody's always like, "Oh, Brad Pitt's such a heartthrob." I'm like, "Eh, not for me." So I was excited more so at how seeing just a little bit that these trailers were cut. I was excited to see how it was going to present itself, and it just looked like fun. So yeah, I was going and going, hey, I'm going to enjoy this. And if it's terrible, it'll be fine. I'm still going to enjoy this. Spencer.
So I was a bit divided going into this, only because they were pushing this movie so hard.
They were. Yeah.
Like going into this, like tickets seemed like they were on sale like July 1st for this thing or something ridiculous. Like I remember when I saw it on sale, I was like, but this doesn't come out for over a month. Like why are we pushing it this hard? And so like I don't know, there's something about like when a studio's like, you should really see this, I'm like, I really don't want to. You know, kind of like Morbius when they brought that back to the theater.
Like
it's a bad place to be when you're in the Morbius boat. But also actually I only watched like the first version of the trailer. I knew others came out, but I'm like, I feel like I don't want to like get over spoiled or something. Watching the first version of the trailer, I was like, okay, there could be something good here. But, like, all the other things the studios were doing kind of made it feel like, this is a garbage movie, and we just kind of want to see how many people we can trick into getting it. Uh-huh. So, like, that's... I was like... like, I could see this being a good movie, but it seems like the studio thinks it's a bad movie. So, I was like, I don't know what's actually happening. So, I went in with that.
And mind you, like, Brad Pitt is the type of person who looks like he doesn't age. Like, he gets older,
slowly.
But he's aging. Like, because, I mean, you take, for instance, like Amy mentioned, Legends of the Fall. Cool World was one of the first movies I ever saw him in.
That's right. I did see Cool World.
With Kim Basinger and, you know, Brad Pitt. But things like Interview with a Vampire, Seven, 12 Monkeys, like Amy mentioned, Meet Joe Black, sorry. And then Fight Club, Snatch. Like, he was phenomenal in Snatch. He's done a lot of great movies where his... You feel like his personality is just this cool, calm guy. Minus, you know, his demeanor in Snatch where he plays like
Wild and out. Like, wild and out. What is he?
They call him a pikey or piker. I don't know if that's an insult term, so I apologize.
Nomadic.
I know, but there's also, you got to be sensitive. I don't know if that's...
You can say nomad.
Okay, well, he's a nomad in that movie, and he's a bare-knuckle fighter. And then he really kind of hit his stride with the Ocean's movies, really bringing that like cool, suave demeanor to the big screen. And then, obviously, Fight Club was crazy, and that was a really fun movie. But... Brad Pitt is one of those people that's just, I don't know, I don't think he'll ever move out of that arena of being that really cool guy that you just want to hang out with, you know, unless he's like really made up to look ultra old like he did in the beginning of this movie or in the trailers. Like when he takes off the glasses and the bucket hat and everything, he looks cool. Mm-hmm. Like was that it on your expectations? Yeah. Okay, let's talk first impressions as soon as we leave the theaters. Because we all went to go see it together. We're not going to talk about Spencer falling asleep the first time.
I don't know what you're talking about. Outed him.
I said we weren't going to talk about it.
You just... He does this a lot.
First impressions, right out the gate, Spencer.
Okay, so I'm giving two.
Oh, boy.
From my first showing away. So the first showing, since I did fall asleep, I was like, oh man, this movie seems really awesome. Like, I need to see this again. So the second one, I was like, yeah, this movie is awesome. I really like
it. So just double down on the first one. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, now I have certainty. Because okay, like, yeah. I could have missed something. It's like, ah, oh, this is terrible.
This is terrible. Why don't we watch this garbage?
I first impressions right out, I was like, that was fun. I like this. I could probably watch this again. That was fun. Spencer, you gonna watch it again? I like this.
I did.
Yes.
Already. I mean, you just outed him more than I did.
No,
so.
I just, because sometimes, because, well, for example, nope, you went back and watched it a second time too, mm-hmm. before we had our thing. So,
but that was for reference-wise. I mean, it's Jordan Peele.
This could be for references as well.
It wasn't. He fell asleep. Shiny. I was sitting next to him.
You didn't even notice. Don't even be like, I did notice.
No, you
and
didn't.
Not like that one time you were snoring in the theater, but it's okay.
Oh my gosh. What about you, Eddie?
First impressions for me, I actually really liked what I wasn't expecting for this movie. Going into it, like I said, all the information that I got out of the trailer, leaving the theater, I was like, I'm glad that whoever cut those trailers did all right enough to not put in the really big parts.
They were smart.
They were very smart, because there's a lot of big key components to this movie that only make sense if you watch the movie as an entire thing. The trailer gives like a lot of the bit fun parts, but the bigger key things and even a lot of the more subtle aspects of it were great, and it was fun, and it was, like I said, it was moving in terms of the fact that like every bit of the movie, every second of the movie was pushing forward the story. There were no dead spots. I felt like there were no dead spots in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, this movie had all the right moments of push. It all had all the right moments of, you know, bringing it down. And even those moments where that were brought down only solidified the certain characters that you were watching. There were instances where nothing was happening on the screen, and yet you were still glued to the screen because the people who were on screen or the things that were happening, as small as they were, meant a lot to you as an audience member because you're invested in what's going on. The idea of somebody as unsure of himself, or to the point to where he believes he's so unlucky, to have him go through the events that happen on this train, which the train itself is a great backdrop for this movie. I think I had mentioned it to you guys. I felt like this was what is that movie? Murder on the Orient Express was done in the current day, and something else. It was good because there's a whole story to this movie that isn't unveiled at all throughout the entire trailer. So thankful for that. But let's kind of dive into the story. Speaking of that, the movie itself is just one big whodunit and who finds out what. Because you have Brad Pitt, who's supposed to do this simple job. You find that out in the trailer. It's a small job. It's supposed to get him back into the game. He gets on this train. He is unable to get off the train once he's acquired what he's looking for. Comes up against not only other assassins, but also individuals who are plotting things on the back end. And he's funny, but he's also aloof at certain times. For him being an assassin, he wasn't very bright at times. But that added to like the realism, like the groundedness of the character. I think the inclusion of Brad Pitt's character going through therapy and using his therapy tools and things of that as part of his response mechanism for the incidences that are happening.
Hurt people.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And mind you, I'm in therapy and I could relate to some of the things he was saying, but in the context of what was happening, wasn't the time. Not nearly the time or place for any of that. And I really liked how every part of each mystery that was unveiled throughout this one, it was like, I don't know if you guys have ever gotten one of those, what are those calendars for Christmas?
It's the advent calendar, yeah. But you get like the cool ones where you get really nice surprises and not just chocolate every day.
Yeah. Like, this was like, as he continued to understand more and more what's going on, it was like, open another door on that advent calendar and open another one and open another one as you're going through understanding the bigger picture, which the bigger picture isn't revealed to you until the very end. And it's still, it's great how the writers of this movie kind of brought this story full circle for people to really grasp and understand. I don't know. What did you think, Ames?
I can agree. I mean, the constant, since we are following Brad Pitt's character, Ladybug, I loved that basically his anxiety that he's hypervigilant, his constant need for reassurance was so, like, I got it. It made him so real, but also kind of bumbly.
Yeah.
Like, it was not full Mr. Magoo, but you had moments where it felt like he should be a Mr. Magoo, but he also actively problem solved. Then I really, one of my absolute, like, the duo was great for Tangerine and Lemon. So, yeah.
With Aaron Taylor Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah, and Brian Tyree Henry, I loved. There's an entire exposition about people being akin to certain children, from different characters from a children's show. And you're like, oh, dude, this guy's got to be a little unhinged. And then there's the layers start getting pulled back and you're like, oh, it makes sense.
Well, and
it makes sense.
And like the credibility as the movie goes on, like you think in the beginning, because Brian Tyree Henry has this whole like monologue, a short monologue about how he views people as different trains from Thomas the Train and Friends, and how certain people like match with the personality traits of some of the other characters on the show. And you're like, this is ridiculous. Oh my God. And you think it's funny and you think it's cute, and it is cute. But then you come to realize like the credibility of how he attributes certain people to certain characters is like, it's detrimental to the story. And it's like, I will never look at Thomas the Train the same way again. And you know what's crazy? On the whole, no pun intended, train about Brian Tyree Henry, he's from North Carolina. That guy did an amazing British accent.
It was proper. It wasn't too posh.
Mm-mm.
It sounded fully like anchored. And there was no slip in it at all in any space.
Man, so an American can do a British accent.
Right.
We found the one.
He is the one. He was just a delight. And then I always want to give a shout out to one of my absolute favorite people to just watch in general, Hiroyuki Sanada. He's playing the father, grandfather, they call him the elder, I think. Right. That's the tag they give him. He carries so much weight in simply his presence alone that it has all of the callback to samurai films, and I crush on that man a bit. Like,
and you take a look at like his filmography is rich with his own culture. Mm-hmm. And he can get lost in that so well that you're like, I love this actor. Like, unfortunately, I wasn't a huge fan of the Mortal Kombat movie, but that opening and his transition into becoming Scorpion and his whole role throughout that movie made sense. It just felt right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen him in things like,
I saw him in Rush Hour, and I feel very ashamed to say that I saw him in a Rush Hour movie.
He was in Rush Hour 3. Mm-hmm. I first saw him in The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. unfortunately. and mind you, it wasn't just him in that movie. I mean, you had a slew of other individuals like Ken Watanabe, Billy Connolly's in it.
Keep talking so far.
Masato Harada.
I like all these men. This is problematic. Like, I actively like all of these men.
But he plays like a seasoned samurai,
yeah,
who is very much against having Tom Cruise be in their camp.
We're all against Tom Cruise being in anybody's camp. Sorry,
it's true. Scientology. but then you see the camaraderie, and you see his love for the culture of what he's in, and we've seen him in a bunch of other things, but I feel like every time I look at him, I see like the richness displayed of his culture being put out on screen every time he's on it. I haven't seen him play much outside of things pertaining to his culture, things to his heritage. Mm-hmm. But what I have seen, he's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen him in a specific role that I did not like.
Yeah. And then I'm going to give one tiny ridiculous shout out because there are a couple of cameos in here. I had mentioned, it's not really, I don't know, I wouldn't consider it a spoiler about, because they have him on the filmography, but Channing Tatum makes a cameo. And the only reason I bring this up is because somebody posted, Amazon Prime posted a meme from The Lost City, which is Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum. And Channing Tatum, of course, is a model for the romance book that Sandra Bullock is the author of, blah, blah, blah. But he ends up going to find a guy named Trainer to come save Sandra Bullock, and it turns out to be Brad Pitt. And so Channing Tatum's on the train, and he's reading one of the books from that he's the cover artist for, from Lost City, and he interacts with Brad Pitt, and I was like, I like this. This is dumb, but it's cute, and I appreciated it.
It was, and it was good. It was cool because it added that layer of connectivity, because David Leitch, I don't even know if he's, I'm pronouncing that, or David Leitch is creating a universe where these particular performers like just appear in all the other films. It's kind of like what, sadly, what Adam Sandler does with like Chris Rock and what's his name? Kevin James, like with the, when he does like the Grown Ups movies and when he does other properties and things like that, he brings in certain people. I feel like
Rob Schneider.
Yes. Rob Schneider, David Spade. I feel like David Leitch, whatever.
We're
working on it. You know, we appreciate your work. I feel like he's creating a whole nother type of universe where I don't know if there's any connectivity with Lost City or any of his other movies, but he has fun making these little cameos and adding a little flavor to it. In that little flavor just adds a little bit more fun to it. It adds that little bit of spice on top of it that adds to the fun factor. Because like you said, Channing Tatum was in The Lost City with Brad Pitt, which would be interesting if they make the correlation between, you know, what happens on that train and him and whatever, and then that's what leads to him hiring him for The Lost City. That would be interesting and fun.
I didn't even think about that. That's actually a great way. That's a conspiracy. Keep going.
That's a conspiracy theory. Spencer, was there any highlight about the film that you liked? Any of the actors or performances?
Okay, this is a dumb one, only because I haven't seen him in a while, but what is his name? Where is my sheet?
Logan, what's his face?
No, it's Masai Oka.
Yes! Hiro Nakamura from Heroes, season one.
I like that, this man, not only because of that, but he owns like a game development studio now. A game development studio.
Oh, game development. Yeah. I honestly thought I heard cake development. I'm like, that's a whole nother level of cake.
I would be very interested in that. But no, he actually made one of my favorite games from like 2019.
Really?
Like Outer Wilds. Fantastic.
Oh, he does that one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, like the studio, he's in charge of this. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I like him. He makes me smile every time I see him. I don't care.
And he was in this movie, and it was fun seeing him because he plays a conductor, and he's like, one stop. And then he like keeps like, you know, doing the fingers to the eyes and pointing at him and everything. That was fun. I really have to give it to one of the unique dynamics in the film that I didn't know was going to play out so well, but it did, was that dynamic between Brad Pitt and Aaron Taylor Johnson. A lot of the scenes that they were in, a lot of the conversations, even there's a scene where Aaron Taylor Johnson Tangerine has to step off the train with his twin, quote unquote, to prove that they have the briefcase or whatever, and him and Brad Pitt go out of there and they, you know, they flub it up and they go back on the train and they're literally having this conversation and Brad Pitt's like, man, we had it with this, and it's just a hilarious dynamic. I really liked it. I really am enjoying the evolution of Aaron Taylor Johnson's roles that he's getting and giving it more like just credibility as a great actor. You know, I don't know if there's been many opportunities we've seen Aaron Taylor Johnson use his own voice, because he is English. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've ever seen a lot of opportunities, because the last time we saw him, he was doing a Sokovian accent, whatever that is. And that came and went, unfortunately. But in this role, he was great. I don't know if he did a lot of his own stunts, but the conversations and the just communication, whether physical communication or verbal communication between him and Brad Pitt, I thought was great. And I really liked it. And that goes back to like that story writing. Like, do you guys feel like this type of story writing is something that is the depth of this story writing is sometimes missed in a lot of these types of high action movies? Or do you feel like that's a whole subgenre on its own? Guy Ritchie does things like this. Guy Ritchie adds a lot of the action, high pace movement of the movies, where there's a lot of like dialogue, a lot of witty dialogue, and a lot of flashbacks to information that makes credibility to the scene you're about to see. And there was some of that influence in this movie, and it really shines. It really shows. But do you think that is something that it's very niche to where you can't really do it all the time? Or do you think that's something that is highly missed in a lot of high action fluid movies, or movies that try to make it high action?
See, I would think that this is niche only because it requires you to be a very good storyteller and director to make sure that it all lines up as it needs to.
That's a good point.
Because like, if you do not have like everything lined up where it needs to be, it will fall apart and it will fail and it will be unsalvageable.
That's very true.
Yeah.
What do you think, Ames?
Well, I think that like it I agree with Spencer. It needs somebody at the helm that understands not only how to organize it, but to make it cohesive all the way from beginning to end without feeling like you are pigeonholing story between action sequences, instead of having the story carry in and through the action sequences as necessary. And I don't know. It can be niche and it can not be niche simultaneously. We're seeing it more so now. Well, no, I can't say we're seeing it more so now, because if we look at like, we can look at, do you know what? I'm going to bring up Bruce Lee. We can look up, I think I saw Enter the Dragon. Wait. Which is the one where he goes to Rome?
That's Way of the Dragon.
Was it the with the restaurant, Spencer?
I saw them all at the same time. So
The
Way of the Dragon.
Okay. So in that, the story is still carried in the fight sequences. It's not like the end goal of the fight sequences is to completely resolve the problem. You know that there's going to be more fights. In this, we're seeing fight sequences that are used to continue to drive the plot forward, or for Brad Pitt to be like, look, I just want to get off the train. I'm trying to get off the train. Just let me get to where I need to go. So it makes the action in the movie necessary to continue moving the story forward, much like in Everything Everywhere All at Once.
In terms of what?
So the fight sequences in Everything Everywhere All at Once
are
used in a way to highlight the story, but also continue to move the story forward. So like the I keep thinking of the award sequence. The award sequence is necessary to get the story forward. Somebody take the ball from me, please.
No, I'm enjoying watching this drown.
No, go ahead, keep going. I don't want to.
One of the highlights too, as well, with this film, because when you have such a cameo-rich film, you end up with sometimes a flood of different people that show up. One of the things that I have to give credit to the filmmaker and the writers of this movie was the inclusion of I'm not going to say his whole name again, Bad Bunny, in the film. I actually thought, I didn't, here's the thing, I didn't know he was a, what is he, a rapper, singer.
He's some sort of musician.
He's something.
I didn't know,
he was in WWE, and he came out during Royal Rumble, and he came through, and
he got out a few folks.
He got out like two or three, and I think he helped Rey Mysterio do something. I remember seeing that.
And then he tried to turn on Rey Mysterio.
Yep.
That's right.
And he got, and I was just like, I don't know who you are, dude, but good job.
This isn't his filmography.
Whose filmography are you reading?
Bad Buddies. It's like a whole bunch of like music videos. Fast 9, WWE.
Yep. Oh, told you.
I got to give credit to where credit is due. He did a good job. As I don't know if he's the one who did his stunts, but seeing as how well he was able to take like a choreography for like Royal Rumble, I would believe that he was the one who was doing all of these movements in the movie. He did really well, and I have to appreciate his work in the movie. And there was a lot of other great little cameos. You had Zazie Beetz, who, if you're not familiar with her, she played Domino in Deadpool 2, which is another carryover for David Leitch. We're gonna be saying, I'm saying both of them just to be on the safe side. So at least if one of them is correct, please don't hurt me. him, like you mentioned, Channing Tatum, the appearance at the end of Sandra Bullock,
Michael Shannon
as the White Death, I believe his name was.
Yes,
he was the White Death.
I mean,
which I usually don't like him, and I was like, okay, no, okay, this is good.
Was it just me, or did Michael Shannon in this one looked younger than Michael Shannon in Knives Out?
Yes.
I'm like, what did they do to this man?
I mean,
like,
they gave him that hair. They gave him the extension.
I mean, he looked pretty freaking BA. Like, he looked pretty badass. Like, he looked cool.
He looked like he could actually hurt us.
And then
he rolled into the rush, and you're like, oh no, sir.
You know what?
No, sir.
For the fun of the movie, I would take his, you know, somewhat Russian accent for everything else that was going on in the movie. It wasn't a large part of the film, but like the building to that point, I felt it was rewarded. Like, I felt like we got to see the White Death. Mm-hmm. And Michael Shannon is just an imposing guy. Ever since I saw him play Zod, General Zod in Man of Steel, like,
I remember that.
I will find you! That man is terrifying. Like, he looks like the one uncle you don't want to come near because he'll hit you with a cane or he'll pop you on the head. And in this one, he seemed imposing, like, from the get-go. So I have to appreciate his role and the inclusion of that story where you didn't have to do this bombastic, like, mind you, the final fight sequence for him was really action-packed. It was good, but I didn't need something bombastic to give me more credibility of who he was. Mm. Who he was, the power that he has was not based on his ability to fight. At the end, it was his ability to command. Mm. And I felt like he held that commanding presence. That whole, when the train comes into the station, he's just sitting there with like that sword in his hand and he's just looking down. You see the sunglasses and the hair. Oof. I'm like, this dude is scary. Like, this is a good foil for, you know, our characters. But that goes to say, like, the overall story writing for this movie, this is something we talk about quite often on the show, where a great film, not a good film, but a great film is usually a trifecta of victories. You have great acting performances, which great acting performances are given by a great director, and a great director can only work with what he's been given, which is great writing. So when you have those three working in tandem, you're going to walk away with a great experience, you know, and everything that we got out of this movie, every single story arc, every single individual, like, individual's progress throughout the film, I felt was like, it hit those points of credibility. It hit those points of, this is what I was hoping to see with this character, or this is the road that led to this point was warranted. Like, it made sense. It wasn't one of these moments where you're like, oh, well, why the heck did he do that? Or how did he do that? We haven't seen him do any of these things throughout the whole movie. Or what's up with this? Why does this have to do with whatever? Blah, blah, blah. Everything had a place and a purpose. And it's like a well-organized drawer. When you have a well-organized drawer, you know what you're looking for. And when you see it, it's just a thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. And this is where you have a well-organized, well-written, well-acted, well-directed movie that gave audiences a great time to experience. Were there any moments in the movie where you guys were like, or unsure, or like, were there any hiccups for you guys, or was there anything that you guys considered an issue?
Spencer?
So I saw this movie twice.
Oh,
you mentioned that because you fell asleep the first time.
Yes, yes,
oh,
yes.
Gosh.
And you know what? Like, for me, no. Like, there's nothing I can really think of where I'm like, I had an issue with this person. But no, like the people I didn't like, I wasn't supposed to like them. Like, the people I liked, I was supposed to like. Like,
yeah. Like, which is a sign of great writing for the character, and great acting and great directing. I mean, we're in trifecta.
Yeah, like, no, this movie is just a win across the board.
What about you, Ames?
It's really minute, and I think it's simply because I wanted more from Zazie Beetz. Like, we see her, like, as a brief glimpse as her assassin character. She's got essentially almost a cameo role, as it were, and I wanted more. Which I don't know if that says something about me or it says something about the writing for her. But there was, like, her as Domino was so flippin' fun. Mm-hmm. And then in this, I was like, can I get more, please?
I think it's because in this movie, because we had, like, that great experience with her from Deadpool 2. And in this movie, like, what we get from her is still, like, a fun character in just a different way. Like, it's so short that you just want more of it.
Yeah. I could say that. Yeah.
Well, and I think also we kind of overlooked this, but the inclusion of the concession girl, which we've seen profusely throughout the Amazon series, The Boys, Karen Fukuhara.
Yeah. She plays, I'm going to say Kimiko.
Kimiko. Yeah.
From The Boys. In The Boys. I like her.
The inclusion of seeing her, I almost... Part of my... So I have two slight issues. Number one, I would have loved to have seen something with her because she's more than capable. Mm-hmm. We've seen her in The Boys do incredible, like, acrobatic fighting things. So I was actually hoping maybe, like, something would have came out of that. Like, she was actually, like, part of, like, the handler's assurance to make sure that her assassin doesn't, you know, get out of whack or whatever. So I was kind of hoping to see something come to fruition. If you're not sure who I'm talking about, she's the woman in the movie who sells Brad Pitt the water when he's fighting Aaron Taylor Johnson. And if you haven't seen her in The Boys, and you're old enough.
And you're old enough.
She's really great in that series. So you can get a really good idea of what she's capable of, acting as well as fighting and choreography. But my second small issue, and mind you, maybe there's something else that gives us information, but I wanted a little bit more backstory about the elder from the moment he leaves the mob and he escapes with his son to present day, because apparently he's got people too, and there's elements where it shows, like, well, he has a sense of power and influence somewhere, but where? You know, and it was interesting. Mind you, it's not a big, like, oh, well, that's bull crap. Oh, I wanted to. It's not a big thing. It's just, for me, like, they've created such interesting characters. I could honestly say the same thing for everybody, truly. Yeah. Which, if they're smart, if David Leitch is smart, he'll make, like, he'll create maybe, like, a comic or a graphic novel based on the individuals to give somewhat backstory of the in-between. Like, I would love to see how the twins came about and how they got into their line of work. Side note, that scene where they're recounting the people that they killed at the previous job was highly Guy Ritchie and so much fun, and I loved it. But yeah, I would have liked to seen more of Hiroki Sanada, because he's, oh my gosh, it's an understatement to say that he is a not only great Asian performer, but he is a phenomenal just actor in general.
Yep.
And, you know, things like The Wolverine, he was in The Wolverine. You know, we mentioned things like when he was in Last Samurai, Rush Hour 3, a lot of those movies. We've seen him in those parts, but I don't think we've ever seen him just sit down and just have a speaking conversation in this manner. Mm. And he was phenomenal. He was flawless. And he was willing to have a joke at his expense to a certain extent, like when he was telling his stories or his words of wisdom, or even his banter back and forth with Brad Pitt. He goes, "Let me tell you a story." He goes, "No, I'm good. I'll keep it short." "No, I'm okay. It's a little what?" "No, you know, I'm just like..." That was great, and he did well in it. But I feel like, yeah, those are my two gripes.
I have one more, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what this is about me, but so Joey King, who played Prince,
yes,
was delightful. I hated them. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Good job. Mm-hmm. But all my brain was, I think the line that broke it for me was, I'm always seen like either as a 12-year-old girl or something else. And I was just like, oh, shoot, I know, because I remember you from Ramona and Beezus. And I was just like, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, Joey. I'm so sorry.
What?
So Joey King played Ramona in Ramona and Beezus with Selena Gomez in like the 20...
The more recent one.
Yeah. But I remember, and I was like, why is this driving me so nuts? And then forever after that, once she said that line, all my brain could think of, especially with the tail end and the confrontation that Prince has and everything else, I was like, oh yeah, I can't see you anything but a child at this point. This is problematic. So hard and problematic.
She was in Independence Day Resurgence.
Yes, I was looking through that.
Who is Sam?
I don't remember.
Honestly. Was that the little girl?
Like, here's
Do
the
you
thing.
Think she was the little girl?
I don't really want to remember this movie. So.
Don't worry.
Sorry.
Don't worry, Spencer. You don't have to.
Well, and that brings me to my roundtable question for today's conversation. You know, since we got a really cameo-rich film that gave us fun offerings of celebrities throughout, specifically with Bad Bunny, if a sequel was made to this movie, what musical artist would you like to see appear in the next film? And mind you, this is specifically musical artists. So it can be any part of the band. It could be the lead singer. I almost want to say somebody who hasn't been cameoed in the movie, but then that requires a lot more thinking. Well,
cameoed in movies in general, or just cameoed specifically in this movie?
In this particular, like in the sequel to this movie.
Okay.
Because we had, I mean, Bad Bunny did really well, honestly, until I went and had to look it up, and I'm like, oh, this is the guy all my cousins talk about, or this is the guy that some of the people that I know I used to work with talk about. I didn't recognize him from Royal Rumble until you said it. And I'm like, okay, cool. So what do you guys think? Who would you like to see as a musical artist cameo in the next Bullet Train movie?
Okay, well, that's asking the question of what music artist can actually act.
That's a great question. Well,
and that's a loaded question, because I have somebody I would love to see, but they're dead. So I'm like, hologram?
Okay. They have to be alive.
But I want David Bowie.
They have to be alive. The last movie David Bowie did, he was in The Prestige, and he was not a Bowie
person. He was in Zoolander as himself.
No, he was in The Prestige.
I know.
Either way, cameo.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Another one.
And they have to be alive, Amy.
Jack Black.
Okay.
See, because so that cameo would have to fit in such a weird way to meet, because we know Jack Black can act. He's been doing it. He is.
Yeah, but he's an actor turned musical artist. I don't. He started acting first before he started doing music.
Are we talking Neverending Story 3?
He's done a bunch of stuff.
Ames. I know, but that was I thought he was in Tenacious D after that or before that. Was I just crazy? Am I having problems? I'm going to have to look that up.
I feel like that's a little bit more of like on the side of he's already an actor. I mean, he's been in the two Jumanji movies. He's been in a ton of things. School of Rock. There's a lot of... He's been the lead actor. We're talking like... I mean, if that's your choice, that's your choice.
Well, I don't want to pick Flea again. No offense to Flea. He keeps showing up.
I mean, he was in Back to the Future as a cameo.
He was also recently
in the Obi-Wan storyline.
Yeah.
So Flea or Jack Black for you?
I mean, Jack Black would be my first pick.
Okay. Sorry. Spencer, any ideas? Or you need more time?
This is a hard one, right?
Give me some more time.
Okay.
You want Rihanna?
No, God, no. She's already been in movies. She was one of the main characters in Ocean's 8.
Yeah, I know.
As well as a bunch of other movies. I think if I were to pick a musical artist to act in the next one for this one, I would say it would either need to be... because I don't want to say Childish Gambino because he started as an actor again. That's another one. But I would either like to see, now I got to think about it.
Yeah.
I honestly would like to see either Elton John, because he's done a few cameo roles, but he was really fun in The Kingsman 2.
Mm-hmm. He was trapped on stage in his big outfit.
So either Elton John or... I would love to see Dave Grohl. Like, I feel like him coming in and playing a part that's not specific to him being a musical artist, he can do. I'm pretty sure he's done really great in that movie Studio 666. I would just love to see if we could extend him or stretch him out a little bit more as something else. And I feel like he would have a blast with it. I feel like he would have the most fun and make it something unique and his own. But yeah, I don't know.
How's it going, Spence?
Okay, I got an insane one.
Yes. Oh, boy. Insane in the membrane?
Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Because we're going to be on the train. God. Like, you can have her in something and then you just play like an uppity 9 to 5.
I feel like there's
a
been
a remix of 9 to 5 and then she turns out to be another assassin. Dolly, will you please?
I feel like there's been enough time between her movies to say that that would be a good cameo, because the last major movie she did was that Sunday Service, or that choir movie.
Oh, I vaguely remember that.
With Queen Latifah, but that was ages ago and that was one movie. Prior to that, it's been a minute. So I think that would be fun. That would be interesting. Is that your only one?
Yes.
Now all I'm just like, Dolly! Dolly!
Another one that came to mind, and I think would be really fun, because I feel like he would be able to do the fun part of it and still blend in with the character. Bruno Mars would be fun to see. But, you know, there you go.
If somebody has any ideas, please tweet them at the Filmosophers.
Yeah, because let us know, because I would like to know some of your ideas, because that's, now that I think of the question, there's a whole plethora of performers.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of short.
Cardi B would love to get a swing. Oh my gosh.
I believe she's coming up in some, wasn't she in that stripper movie with Jennifer Lopez?
Hustlers?
Wasn't she?
I don't know. I didn't get to watch it.
Okay.
I didn't get to watch it.
Okay.
It just happened.
Like,
I don't know. Sorry, J-Lo. I don't need you to cameo in anything else.
J-Lo's an actress turned performer, in my opinion. Like, she started out in Selena and then moved her way through as becoming an artist after the fact. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there are certain people that you're like, can you be controlled to do the role?
That's an opportunity to find out. Like, that's the thing. Some musicians, you're giving them that space to be like, do you know what? We want to cameo you. How good are you on screen? Terrible. Okay. So we've learned.
I know who Amy's secret choice is though.
Hmm.
Do you know who it is?
No.
Steven Tyler.
Ew. Oh my God. No.
Yeah, we can put it in that song.
Ew. Okay. Ew. Ew. No. No, 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 no.
What's that, ladybug? You don't want to miss a thing.
Why?
Wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. And I want to see, does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles? Let's start with Amy, since she's on a Steven Tyler high.
No. This film passes for me. That was really good to get out of me. Oh my gosh, Eddie. So yes, this film passes for me. The color, the design, the use of a semi-enclosed space, because most of this is consistently just on the train, is really fun. It utilizes the space well, and it is just an overall good time. Don't have to listen to the critics on this one. I mean,
are they saying negative things?
It's split. There's people that are saying that this is mindless action, and then there's some people that are saying this is really fun.
I bet those are the same people that are super fans of like the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Well, either way we shake the stick, I am going to give this a 4.2 out of 5 monocles, and it's not just because I really like the neon colors and the soundtrack is awesome.
Spezza.
I will second soundtrack is awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, this movie passes for me. This movie is well executed. The music is amazing. I didn't know I needed a Japanese version of Holding On to a Hero, but I did, and I like it.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, did you know this song has been around for a long time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why are we just learning about it? Like, this is really fun. Oh.
As a child, Short Circuit 2 was one of my favorite movies, which has that song in it.
Really?
Johnny Number 5 is alive.
I don't even know what language it is. I'm sorry. Is it Japanese? Is it Japanese? Well, because you have a slew of different things. Go ahead. Never
mind. It's a bullet train in Japan.
just fantastic cast. Like, it was just all really well done movie. I had a really great time both times I went to see it. I'm going to give this one 5.
You can give it a 5. Yeah. Very cool. Well, this movie passes for me. This is absolutely tapping into that Brian Tyree Henry accent performance. This movie absolutely passes for me. This has all the elements, like I said, of that wonderful trifecta. Great writing, great directing, great acting. This movie has fluidity from the beginning to end. There is a nonstop. This is a nonstop party ride for any audience member. You're going to go in, you're going to see things start from the beginning, and it won't stop until the very end. And even then, you get little tidbits here in the mid-credit scene and so forth, which we're not going to spoil. You got to go and check it out yourself. It was just a fun experience, and I loved it. In terms of monocles, I think I'm also going to give it a 5. It was absolutely fun. Those minor glitches that I was talking about, those minor little things, those can be remedied after the fact. But all in all, this movie had a lot going for it, and I was pleasantly surprised. So this movie gets a 5 for me. I highly recommend it. You should check it out. It is in your local theaters right now. Go buy a ticket. Go check it out. Let us know what you think. That wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on any streaming platform for podcasts, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can check us out anywhere where you are streaming podcasts. Give us a subscribe. Give us a listen. Let us know if you like it. Give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Also, you can check us out on our website at thefilmlosophers.com. There we got over allegedly 300 episodes where you can listen to everything from romance, action, comedy, anime, conversations about the industry even. We have great conversations. We were actually talking about it the other day. We have a really great interview that we did with one of Amy's favorite authors, Pierce Brown. I was actually re-listening to that today. It was really cool. Very early in our years, but we got an opportunity to very early in his years as well, in his career. So also, you can check us out on the socials at Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. As I mentioned, Spencer and I will be posting a new giveaway this Friday on our socials. So check it out. It'll be on our Instagram or Facebook page. You're going to want to check this out because it is going to be an awesome giveaway. And once we announce it, we will be giving it throughout the rest of the month for folks to sign up for it. So if you're ready for another one, because the last one was really great, and the young lady who is expecting it, it is on its way and it should be heading out to you shortly. So, but again, this is one of those movies where you really want to take the time to not worry more about how to understand how the ending is going to happen, but just go along for the ride. Like any good ride along, just enjoy it and expect to be wowed and have fun with it. So, but again, this was another great episode. We appreciate you listening. And from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.